Welcome to episode 8. I'm Emily Reese from June Media, and this is brand new music from Austin Wintry for Assassin's Creed Syndicate. You'll hear from him shortly. And speaking of Assassin's Creed, keep your eye on Twitter and Facebook later. You can enter for a chance to win the entire Assassin's Creed soundtrack catalog. All the major releases are coming out for the very first time ever, from like Assassin's Creed 1 through Syndicate, once that one is actually physically released. And so we have a set for you, and so keep your eye on the social media, Binnis, and we'll keep you posted that way. Anyway, before we hear Austin talk about Assassin's Creed Syndicate, it's Lenny Moore's turn. You might know Lenny's music from Outkast or maybe Rising Storm. Lenny has new music out for Counter-Strike Global Offensive, and here's how Lenny got involved with that project.
I was asked by Mike Moraski over at Valve. He's one of their audio gurus there, and really good dude, and he asked me what I'd be interested in doing this sort of artist pack. And they've been doing this little experiment in their workshop for Counter-Strike Global Offensive. They have these artists, different artists, create a little 5-minute music pack that works to replace the original music. And it's a fun project because the idea of it is that all the individuals that are playing Counter-Strike, if they are the MVP, then their personal MVP music gets played and broadcast to everybody else. So
awesome.
It creates sort of a custom music set for everybody, and everybody can pick and choose what they like, and it kind of adds a little personalization to it. So he asked me if I could write something, and he gave me an example of some of the artist packs that were out there already, and I was listening through everything. And the thing that makes me giggle is, like, because sometimes it involves a little bit of insanity when you think about concepts. So I'm listening to the original music for Counter-Strike, which has a certain quality to it. It's a mixture of sort of that classic thing you've heard in a lot of modern games, they call epic orchestral, which is like
yes.
A combination of electronic elements, orchestral elements, and what I call, you know, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way at all. It's just how I think of mixing. I call it a pop mix, meaning that when you're mixing popular music, you're mixing, you know, your percussion is very forward in the mix. And there's a thing in mixing. There's ambient kinds of mixing, like if you're listening to an orchestra in a concert hall, and then more like studio mixing, which is where you've got a microphone 3 feet away from the source, like a flute, and it's a different sound, and it's a more intimate sound. So in pop mixing practices, there's a lot of like controlling the percussion and all the little elements, and it puts things in a very stylized kind of way. So when I listen to the original music, it's kind of that way. And when I was looking at the artist packs, there was a few that were in a similar style that were like that. There was one, you know, this guy Skog. It's like really harsh heavy metal. I love it. It's awesome. It's just really aggressive. Yeah. Like kind of stuff, which is very different than, you know, that sort of hybrid style. And then there was a couple other artists that did some different things. But there was a lot of stuff that was sort of this mixture of orchestral elements, electronic elements, that was pretty consistent as I was listening to all the different examples. And I was sitting there thinking to myself, you know, there's no funk. And I thought, you know, I just thought about who's playing the game, you know, and you know, a lot of these games, the age range is all over the place. It could be, you know, like teenagers too, like people in their 40s or 50s. I know there's definitely some hardcore 60-year-old video gamers out there, and you've got to please the clients and give them something that they want. So there may be some out there that like Sly and the Family Stone and Prince and Earth, Wind & Fire and all these, you know, bands from the 70s and stuff like
that
used a horn section and that sort of electric rhythm section. So I decided to get all of my funkster buddies together and record. So it's all live musicians. It's all real people. Even the electric piano is a real Fender Rhodes electric piano from the 70s. And it was also fun for me because I'm an electric bass player, so I haven't played in years because mostly I've been telling people I just play the pencil. So it's like, this is what I play these days. This is my instrument. And so for me, I actually played electric bass on it, and it was slightly painful in the sense that my technique is really rusty. But luckily, with modern recording, you can digitally edit.
Yep.
And you can just keep playing it over and over again until you play it right. And then you can say, that's okay, amazing. That's the one I want to keep. The thing that's been really fun is when it launched, which was the end of September, so it hasn't been out very long. It's only been out a couple of weeks. The thing that was really fun, because I would see, you know, people post on YouTube and they'd say, here's an example of all the music kits for Counter-Strike, and you see the commentary on YouTube, and sometimes it could be heartbreaking because sometimes you get a troll and they're just mean.
Yes.
You know, but you have to ignore those. But hasn't been much trolling on this stuff when I've seen people describe that particular music kit. What's been very sweet is a lot of people really enjoy it and they like that it's really different. And some people, there's some of the comments that I've seen where somebody goes, how can your enemies be afraid of you after you've killed them when they're listening to this, you know? I really love that. And there was a lot early on the first couple of days where nobody knew what it was. They couldn't define it. You know, so there were some people that were calling it music, you know, like porn music or something like that. And some people said, yeah, exactly. You know, so and I'll wear that like a badge of honor if I need to. But
yeah, right.
So some people called it that. Some people called it 80s cop show kind of music. Some people called it, like a TV show theme or something like that. So like it was something where they were listening to it and they couldn't quite make out what to think of it. And if I was an 18-year-old kid that's never heard 1970s Earth, Wind & Fire or that sort of Sly and the Family Stone thing or just anything in that category, it's like, yeah, I can imagine being 18 and I've never heard that stuff, but what is that? I don't know. Yes, my grandpa listens to, or something like that.
Right.
And that's fine. If I've turned an 18-year-old onto grandpa's like 70s funk kind of thing, I'm going to be proud of that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Really fun to put that together and come up with this idea that was sort of crazy. Like, I do like being outside of the box a lot of times. And the thing that was really cool was Mike over at Valve was like, really, like, whatever you want to do is cool by me. Like, really? Okay. What do you think of this? Part of me enjoys the idea of stirring it up, it up on that level of really challenging people. That's okay. And I don't know if challenging, Counter-Strike players to hear, a funk band is that much of a challenge, but,
It might be.
It might be. I'm still waiting for the trolls to kick in. So. One of the other things that was sort of fun about that, because the game is a little older, was the implementation part of it was kind of cool, because there's it's almost like a text document that you fill out that you have to kind of type in the rules, and it's like early. This is not like Like if we go back 20 years, game music was programmed. It was tone generator, and actually maybe that's 30 years. Maybe that makes me old. You know, but you know, it's like using tone generator, the NES days of using a tone generator to create your music, like the old Mario kind of games. When I saw the text document, that brought back a little flashback to like me being in high school and experimenting around with programming music in a Commodore 64 and basically, you know, programming rhythms and melodies and things like that and basically doing it in like a basic programming language or some sort of crazy thing like that. So it makes me uber geeky.
You can learn more about Lenny Moore at patreon.com/JuneMedia and at lennymoore.com. So Austin Wintory, known for A, being a total mensch, and B, for his music to Journey, The Banner Saga, Monaco, he scored the new Assassin's Creed Syndicate. He definitely took the sound of the franchise in a new direction, and he got to do the coolest musical stuff in this game. Here's our chat. Austin, it's so wonderful to speak with you, especially about Assassin's Creed Syndicate. Such great news, and thank you for chatting with me today.
As always, it is a pleasure. A pleasure and a privilege.
You've been holding this carrot in front of my nose for a few months now, saying you had something coming, and of course, I know how this works. You can't talk about it. And then finally, Just hearing this announcement, what an awesome piece of news. Tell me about getting involved and working on Assassin's Creed Syndicate.
It was a funny thing to be tight-lipped about because it was so all-consuming. And so anytime anybody ask, you know, what are you up to or what have you been working on? It was just kind of like, you know, things. And it was, I'll say right out of the gate, it was a sort of a dream project in many ways because I had a rather absurd amount of creative freedom. They reached out to me basically a year ago, October of last year, and said, we are, you know, interested in talking to you about Syndicate. I think they were talking to some other folks as well, or they were kind of exploring their options.
Sure.
I hadn't ever worked with them, especially because the them in this case is the Quebec City branch of Ubisoft, which was the first time they had been the lead developer on an Assassin's Creed game. And so they were looking for ways to really differentiate themselves. And also because, you know, this is the sixth, you know, full AC game, and they were feeling like, you know, a lot of the tropes within the game, that sort of thing, have been pretty thoroughly explored, and maybe it's time to cleanse the palate or just try something new and novel. And certain game mechanics are pretty well locked because that's part of the real heart and soul of what makes Assassin's Creed Assassin's Creed. Mm-hmm. But other details, which are really not peripheral, they're still pretty core, but they're not maybe quite as core as the game mechanics, such as music. They said, let's just treat that as a blank canvas. So they approached me and said, you are not beholden in any way whatsoever to any prior AC game. And with that said, how would you score a game set in Victorian London that is, you know, Assassin's Creed, which means the following kind of plot implications and things like that?
Sure.
What would be your take? I immediately called my agent and I said, I'm going to send them a pitch and let's just be okay with the fact that they are not going to hire me because my pitch is going to be so far outside their comfort zone that they'll never say yes. But it is the honest answer to how would I score an Assassin's Creed that takes place in Victorian London.
Sure.
And to my complete astonishment, they got back to me very fast and were like, It's you. Let's make this happen. And so pretty immediately, off we went.
Some of the things that stood out to me immediately, because I had the pleasure of listening to this yesterday, and the things that stood out to me were the emphasis on solo instrumentation, which is very nice, with whether it's violin, cello, or, you know, later in the soundtrack we hear maybe oboe, flute, clarinet, things along those lines. And so that kind of stood out for me. And also, I say adventurous, and I don't mean this anything other than just the adventurous tonality, you know, the kind of more modern spin on the tonality. So talk to me a little bit about those kinds of things, and of course add whatever else you'd like to add there.
Well, what you're saying is essentially the essence of what that pitch was, that I was sure they were going to say, you know, this is just not Assassin's Creed. You know, mm-hmm. Even if they were to come back and say, look, we love this.
Yeah.
I was still prepared for them to say it's really not. But I took them at their word because they were very emphatic of, we want to hear something we feel like we haven't put in a game like this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, you know, a lot of folks say that. But in this case, I had this weird feeling like maybe they actually mean it. Part of the pitch was, I said, what if we avoid this notion of epicness as much as possible and go for the visceral intensity of extreme intimacy,
mm-hmm.
through something that aims at the zeroed in, the close up. We're able to achieve this visceral intensity that I think of an orchestra as like this big lumbering dinosaur.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's the sheer thrill of that. Is exactly the power you want to harness.
Mm-hmm.
But for this, it wasn't an attempt to kind of be literally assassin-like, but there is kind of a fun corollary to the idea of, like, there's a nimble, quick, cat-like, on-your-feet quality to chamber music that an orchestra really fundamentally lacks. And I just intuitively thought that could be really cool. What if it's a very small ensemble of soloists? And you were very correct to identify it. The core group is 9 strings, 3 violins, 3 violas, 3 cellos, but not written as a violin part, a viola part, a cello part, but written as violin 1, 2, 3, viola 1, 2, 3. So it's 9 part writing, 9 mm-hmm. like chamber music, you know, mm-hmm. like one of the kind of spiritual godfather pieces of music for this score is the Mendelssohn Octet for Strings, which he wrote when he was 18. That's basically double string quartet, you know, 4 violins, 2 violas, 2 celli, and that, but written one person to a part, of course,
mm-hmm.
as any octet would be. And that, to me, was the piece that I thought a lot about.
Yeah.
But Mendelssohn, in his short 35 years of life, wrote quintessentially 19th century music that is somehow the opposite of that. You know, he's a quintessential romantic, and yet his music is like Legolas, you know, it prances on its toes with incredible accuracy.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I wanted. That was the aspiration. Thank you.
let's talk about tonality then, because your tonal structure is absolutely not Mendelssohn, because that was never anything Mendelssohn was known for. You know, was known for those things you described, a pristine, almost kind of Mozart-like perfection, but, you know, not much adventure in terms of harmony.
Actually, the funny thing, you've kind of made me remember one of my little things I've been telling folks who asked about the score, and when I, you know, we recorded in London at Abbey Road, and I like to address the musicians beforehand anytime I record anywhere to kind of give them a sense of where their head should be. And what I said to them, which I think will answer your question, is that you could think of this music as Mendelssohn if I had gone back in time and abducted him and then transported him about 100 years or 75 years into the future to hang out with Bartok for a while. And then sent him back.
Tell me about some of the performers you have had to work with here.
The core backbone is this ensemble of strings and winds and trumpets that we did at Abbey Road. And so it was, you know, the nine strings, and our concertmaster is this lovely woman, Jackie Shave, who has a number of solos in the score, kind of incidental to the ensemble. And then we, of course, had two flutes and two oboes and two trumpets, all used kind of in certain places. There are quite a few piano solos in the game, played by another London musician named Ian Farrington, and he absolutely blew me away, because I actually sent him, there are a couple of cues, especially at the end of the game, that are really quite virtuosic and in my mind they were not something that are reasonable to ask somebody to sight read in a session situation.
Yeah.
So I sent the parts ahead of time to him, and he showed up with them quite learned. And so we booked, he made it through the entire score in 2 hours. We had two nights booked, and we didn't even need him the second night. He literally did it all the first, and he never played a wrong note. All subsequent takes were because we wanted to, you know, I had suggestions on phrasing and on pedaling, and I wanted to manipulate it a little bit as per my norm, but never because it was like, sorry, I played a wrong note, which was remarkable. But the two sort of core stars of it are Sandy Cameron on violin, and Tina Guo, of course, my longtime sort of musical soulmate, on cello. I thought it would be fun, if a little on the nose, to have an instrument that we associate with the brother Jacob and an instrument that we associate with the sister Evie, because it's the first AC game where you play as two different leads where you can actually toggle back and forth between them. And this is why I call the main theme Bloodlines, because Jacob and Evie are wrestling with the same question of, like, what is our, you know, what is our legacy? That, you know, they're both dealing with the loss of their father. And which is ironic, because I lost mine 5 days before starting this project. So it was impossible for that not to be a big part of my process. You know, on the soundtrack, it's dedicated to him. And in fact, he many, many years ago, like 15 years ago, he gave me for Christmas one year a conductor's baton that I never used. I don't know why. It just sat in a box. I never used it. So I conducted this score with that baton, and then I immediately put it back in the box to never use again. Things like that tend to matter to me. And so I thought this is a score that should be about this idea of family and about the edges, the peripheral edges of right and wrong, because Jacob and Evie both also explore that. They're both, especially Jacob, are among the most sort of morally ambiguous assassins from the history of this franchise. their sense of right and wrong gets a little blurry, which, you know, Assassin's Creed lives in that space, but this one, you know, because there's two of them, Jacob and Evie, they can kind of fight over what's right and wrong, and Evie tends to be the voice of reason. And so I wanted the thematic material to be hearted in that, which meant this was all a long-winded way of why there isn't a theme for Jacob and a theme for Evie. There's one theme that is collectively both of their themes, which is basically just the theme to the whole game, because the game's only interest derives in the characters seeing us through this story. But nonetheless, I do like playing little musical games, and so I like associating colors with characters, because then it's like if the cello is working its way through the theme in some way, I like the idea that that tips the hat that this is Evie's inner thought process.
Did you write the pub songs?
So, that is one of my big, there's a couple of things with vocals on this score.
Yeah.
When we first chatted about it, you immediately kind of called out the soprano vocals.
Yeah.
Which there are, on the soundtrack album, there are four or five or six when all is said and done. But there's a lot more than that in game. And she's working through the text all comes from Henry, the libretto to Henry Purcell's opera, Dido and Aeneas.
Nice.
Which, especially up until the 20th century, and certainly at the time of Victorian London, the most famous English language opera around.
Yeah.
Even though at that point it was already almost 200 years old, no one supplanted Purcell in notoriety among British composers until you know people like Ralph Vaughan Williams and Benjamin Britten and even like Peter Maxwell Davies or Gustav Holst or you know the British contributions to Western classical music in the 17th and 18th and 19th centuries was bizarrely scant.
Yeah.
For a place where everyone was going to earn a living, like, you know, Johann Christian Bach, Joseph Haydn, of course, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, ad nauseum. You know, the joke was you go to Italy to learn and London to earn. And the demand was huge, and yet somehow it wasn't cultivating a list of composers that have stuck with us today. I'm sure there were innumerable composers at the time, but for whatever reason, nothing has sustained in the repertoire. Whereas meanwhile, we have Purcell buried in Westminster Abbey, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Anyway, I love his writing so much, and I love the Dido and Aeneas specifically, and so I wanted to use that text. And so Holly Sedillos is a soprano that I have worked with many, many times. She's a dear friend. She's in many ways the vocal equivalent to Tina for me, of someone I'm always trying to uncover, you know, kick over new rocks and explore new depths with what she does. And as for the songs, there are six of them, and their official designation is that they are the murder ballads. And
okay,
they're like Brothers Grimm style folk songs, right?
Yeah.
Or even hymn tunes in a way. So after I was hired, you know, they say, okay, you know, what is your thought? What is your idea? And I say, oh, how about this crazy, you know, chamber music that sort of like got one foot in the 19th century and one foot in the 20th century and you know, pitch this whole thing. They're like, great, we love it. You're hired. Everything's awesome. We're moving in. And I go up for the first meeting and the audio director, Lydia Andrew, who was one of the most amazing people I've ever worked with in my life, she sits me down and says, you have been hired to do something else that you don't know about. She said, I want you to write murder ballads. And what I mean is, as with other AC games, and in particular Black Flag, they like to have a lot of source music in the game alongside the score. And the Black Flag source music was so popular, it took on an entire life of its own because it was primarily these sea shanties. So they said, you know, we loved that about Black Flag, and we were asking ourselves, what would be the equivalent to a thing like that that's appropriate for Victorian London?
Mm-hmm.
And Lydia, who's British, she grew up in London, was, you know, immediately, she's the audio director for the game, and she said, well, you know, growing up, London's a very musical town, and there are a lot of piano bars and places like that that have been singing the same songs for hundreds of years. And so they recorded hours and hours of, you know, diligently researched, authentic period songs that were popular, that would have been being sung by street performers and in town squares. One of Lydia's ideas is, we want to integrate these folk tunes into the score itself. So we carved up the city of London into all these different districts where we kind of assigned a folk tune to have dominance over others in that area. So you'll hear music being sung on the street, which they recorded entirely separately from my score, by street players. But in certain areas, that melody then gets picked up by the score and woven into it. In interactive and dynamic ways.
Cut out my throat and then leave me there to flap like a fish on the deck. Give me the peace that the doctor got when that devil done opened his neck when that devil done opened his neck. Give me the cure, give me the cure. I'd rather be dead than clear in my head.
Then she said, what if we then go one step further and you write original songs that are going under the premise of being, they are being packaged as though they're part of the authentic period music being performed by people in game, actually sung about your deeds as you do big grand gestures in the city.
Cool.
So it was like, you know, you'll have a big impact, like, for example, on the transportation network in the city at one point in the game. Like, train, you know, London has started to build trains, right? It's the Industrial Revolution. So there are train networks being built throughout the city. And at one point you kind of mess with that, which of course causes a big impact on the economy of the city. So it's like some anonymous, you know, parlor bard somewhere decided to write a tune about the fact that some mysterious figure has gone and mucked up the transportation in London.
Dear loving friend, sorry to inform, I will miss our rendezvous. I have been detained, for I am lying dead on the tiles of Waterloo.
So what you hear on the soundtrack album are versions of the songs that I produced exclusively for the soundtrack album, because they were actually recorded entirely separately by a completely separate team in Canada to be done just as anonymous source music that just lives right alongside, but it only emerges after you do certain things. I got hired last year by the Melbourne Symphony in Australia to co-create a show with these three legendary comedian songwriters from Australia called Tripod. And they're kind of like Australian Flight of the Conchords. And they also are huge gamers. And the Melbourne Symphony said, we want to match Tripod and Austin Wintry to create an evening-length show for full orchestra plus the three guys singing, where all the music is written by the four of you, where we literally wrote, you know, like an hour and 45-minute show about, called This Gaming Life, where it's, you know, the three of them singing and a full symphony orchestra as their backup group. So when Ubisoft brought up this murder ballad idea, I had just finished my project with them, and I was desperate to keep working with them. So I said to Ubisoft, this murder ballad idea is amazing. I want to do this with these guys.
Release the hounds, the chase is underway. Today we bag a different kind of prey. Hear the bugle call, we're feasting on a lord today.
And so I brought them in, and so they started writing lyrics, and then, and initially, actually, it was going to be just lyrics, but they are brilliant songwriters themselves. And so they would send me a draft, and then we'd kick it around, and then, or I'd send them some music, and they'd set lyrics to it. There's this one song where, you know, credit where credit is due. It's track 28 on the album. It's called Jokes, 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 and it's this really fast. It's so fast that the whole song is like maybe 60 seconds, and it's very fast. Where it's, you know, jokes, 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 make them laugh until they croak. Fairly slam in the aisles, maiden's fair and princess charming, and you know, the accompanied is this very and that is one that they completely 100%. I can't take any credit for.
Jokes, 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 make them laugh until they choke. Fairly slam in the aisles, maiden's fair and princess charming. Thrills, 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 dashing feats and bloody spills, and I guarantee you'll never see the ending coming.
Thank you so much. It was really great to talk with you today, Austin.
No, thank you, and happy editing. I sincerely hope you'll whittle my rambling, but it's completely up to you. And congratulations on the new show and the new format.
Thank you. I'm a proud
backer of the show, you know, also full disclosure.
Yeah.
Lest I get accused of anything. I am a proud supporter of the show and thrilled to see you interviewing my friends and colleagues and my heroes, you know, that in the game industry.
Learn more about Austin at patreon.com/junemedia and austinwintery.com. And you will be able to enter for a chance to win the entire soundtrack catalog from the Assassin's Creed franchise. That's like from Assassin's Creed 1, Yes for Kid Years, through Syndicate. Keep your eye on social media later. We'll start tweeting and Facebooking about that pretty soon here. Thank you for being a patron and for checking out episode 8. I'm Emily Reese, and Sam Kanan is our producer. Say hi, Sam. Special thanks this week to Lenny Moore and Craig Parker. Follow us on Facebook and YouTube at June Media and on Twitter at Media June. Don't forget, June is J-O-O-N. All right, before you go, we need to get the word out about this new show. We need to get the old Top Score audience on board and listening. Anything you can do to help is super appreciated, like word of mouth or social media or like text somebody or something, all that jazz. Thank you.